This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leone and written by Bettina Jilloa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories. Hello, beautiful, fine people of Earth. This is Dino Ray Ramos. Welcome to Deadline's New Hollywood Podcast. And here is my co-host, not sitting next to me, but...
but somewhere here, reporting from another place in LA. Hi, everybody. My name is Amanda Nduka. So for this episode, we have the star of Pose, MJ Rodriguez, who is... amazing.
Gorgeous. Like, she looked gorgeous. And like, you can't see it, you know, through the Zoom, but she looked gorgeous.
Yes, through the podcast speaker thing. But yeah, she's gorgeous. Third season of Pose. I mean,
Final season of Pose.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a couple of people from Pose on the podcast. We've loved the series since it first came out, since it was first announced. You know, we talk about how groundbreaking it was for representation, for not just LGBTQIA, but for Black women, yeah. for
the Latino community, especially trans women of color, I think.
Right.
I think it serves as an education for a lot of people, whether it be, you know, educating yourself about the trans community, history, you know, of the LGBTQIA community, or just like the ballroom scene, which is basically where a lot of shit we celebrate today comes from. Like, right. A lot of people didn't know, like, Vogue came from that. I mean, voguing is ballroom.
Yeah.
So Madonna, you know, Madonna loves appropriating, so she took that. No shade to Madonna, I love her, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah.
We talk about sort of just the impact of the show, right? Like just the giving these women visibility, giving these stories visibility, how it's really, really taught us a lot about the culture. And it's the fact that it's being shown internationally, the fact that it's done as well as it has, and it's been mainstream. I mean, all that stuff is just really, really important and amazing when it comes to this, you know, sort of fight for diversity and representation. Yeah. And this show definitely left its mark.
And, you know, it's like, yes, it's also a fun show. I mean, there's a lot of serious moments, but it's just a very well done, artistically kind of mindful show. And just to see all this talent and I wish nothing but the best for everyone on the show, especially MJ.
Right.
MJ, you know, I just love talking to her, and she's a light. Hopefully we may have, and since it's the final season, we might have some other people come on New Hollywood before the season end, because there are just so many dope people. Like we've had Janet Mock on and Our Lady J. The iconic, who played the iconic Candy. The new final season of Pose comes out May 2nd.
And you can watch the first two seasons if you haven't seen it on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's on Netflix. So without further ado, here is MJ. MJ Rodriguez, it is so great to have you on the Deadline New Hollywood podcast.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Yes, we are celebrating today. We are celebrating season 3 of Pose. We are celebrating,
unfortunately, the final season, but we won't hold that against you.
Right, because it is somehow groundbreaking. And we're also obviously this, nobody, but we're recording this on 420, which today we just found out the Derek Chauvin verdict, which is guilty on all counts. So this is a very, very exciting podcast day, everything. So we're happy to have you on for this.
Yeah. And I'm happy to be here. You don't understand, by the way, thank you for mentioning 2020, because a lot of people really don't understand how important that is, especially in a time like this, where we get some information like this, we got to celebrate. So 420, not 2020.
420, yes. This is also 420, guys. Yes.
It's so. 420, which doesn't mean anything, guys. This is a no drug zone. Who cares? Right. New York and California, it's legal, guys.
Right.
And it's safer than alcohol, mind you.
Let's say that.
Here. This is the thing. This is like someone made this point earlier. Like, put two people who have smoked a joint in a room together versus two people who have been drinking heavily together. Which of those two people will get into a fight, probably?
Oh, baby, you know the people who've been taking shots.
Yeah, That's a good point. Yeah.
The two people who got high will probably just fall asleep or just eat a lot of hot Cheetos. And that's
they're not going to even drive, honey.
Right.
They're not going to drive. They're going to be like, I don't know if I should get into the car.
Exactly.
Exactly. So, yeah, everybody, you know, if you got to smoke it up, whatever your drug is.
Whatever you do, you know, if you don't celebrate your own way.
Anyways, so MJ, so we want to celebrate you, like we said, in the third season of Pose, which is a groundbreaking series. We talk about this all the time and what it's done for representation, and diversity, and all the things that we're hoping to amplify and get more of now. But I like to start with here on this New Hollywood podcast. We like to sort of start with your background. Sorry, my Alexa is going off. I didn't even say it.
Hey, girl. How you doing, Alexa?
Alexa's excited.
Alexa's excited too. Anyways, so can you talk about you started acting, or your interest started acting when you were I read that you were about 11 years old when you actually started getting into the arts. So can you talk about what sparked that interest for you? Was there a certain performance or a person that you saw that maybe got you interested in this thing we call entertainment?
When I was, I was always with my mom and my dad at the time. Like, we were moving a lot and they were young, so they were just trying to find that place that they could settle into. And then we settled into a place. We went to Newark, New Jersey for a good stint of my toddler years, from 1 to 3. And then we moved to Jackson, New Jersey. Jackson, New Jersey was a place where people are playing music. It's a block party. I went to Jackson, New Jersey, and that was the place where my mother and father wanted to settle, wanted to make sure that I had good schooling. They wanted to make sure I was in a place that was not in the city life, because I would have definitely gotten caught up in the city life, because I was that kid to get caught up in the city life, which I did when I was 11 and 12. But they wanted me to have some kind of structure, and they wanted to have space to do that. They knew that if they were in the city life, that they would be focusing on their jobs and doing everything. So they wanted to make sure that they were in their prime, but also for me to have a space. So when I was in Jackson, New Jersey, my mother saw that I was singing all the time. She knew I could sing at 1, but she started seeing I took it seriously when I was literally about 5 or 6 years old. Mm-hmm. So when I turned 7 and when I hit first grade, she put me into this small little program. I can't even remember the name, but I remember singing the first song. Well, at least this is what I remember. I was 7 years old. We did a presentation and I sang The Greatest Love of All by Whitney Houston. Okay. That moment.
I knew, okay, right? Yeah.
Okay, all day. Every day. It was with the kids, you know, but I was the one that was trying to outshine everybody. So I was like, the great. I was
get it. Okay.
I was doing the most.
You have to show them. Show the girls.
You gotta let the people know so you don't get left behind, honey. So I was literally, I was singing in this presentation. And as my little 7-year-old self was singing, I started noticing this made me feel good. You know, those good feelings that you get, those butterflies that you get, or the tingly good feeling that you get when you do something that you really love, whether it be golfing, playing baseball. Well, for me, singing, that's what sparked it in me. That's what sparked all the things artistically within me. And when she saw that performance, that's when it kind of sailed. So after living in Jackson, New Jersey, having a whole bunch of situations happen to me there, we moved back to Newark, New Jersey, the roots of everything. And that was the best thing I feel like my mother and my father and my other dad could have ever done, because I feel like Newark was like the embryo to my flourishing. And the first thing was New Jersey Performing Arts Center, like Impact. That was the place that really like opened me up to my artistic ventures and my like everything as far as when it came to the arts. So that's where it all started, Jackson, New Jersey. And then I came back to Newark, and Newark was really the place that put me on the map. Newark was my home. Newark was also that rough, hard, loving place that made sure you did what you had to do so you can get out and show out just for the city itself. Cause a lot of art comes from out of Newark, hence Whitney Houston, y'all.
Yes. And so were there particular performers that you looked up to? I'm just curious, who sort of did you feel like you wanted to emulate your career after?
Ooh, I mean, okay. When I was younger, I didn't like, I would dance to the occasional Mary J. Blige. I would definitely listen to some Whitney Houston. My mother made sure that I was adamant on learning a lot of classic artists like Chaka Khan and Luther Vandross, and like the Isley Brothers and
yes, Isley just, Brothers.
Right, it's just a list of Earth, Wind & Fire, Michael Jackson. These were people that I saw true stardom in. Like, I didn't see them as celebrities, and a lot of people are like, girl, you're a celebrity. I'm like, yeah, I know, but I don't take up to that. I like star, because we're all stars, you feel me? So I started seeing these supernova stars, and I was like, am I this? If I'm not, I want to achieve to be it. I want to go after it, because they're doing really well and it looks like they love what they're doing. So Michael Jackson, honestly, he was the blueprint of how I wanted my career to be. He was a philanthropist. He was a humanitarian. He spent so much money and put so much money into so many organizations. And on top of that, the mofo was talented. Mm-hmm. He was talented out of the wazoo. And then as I got older, I started seeing like the archetypes of what Michael Jackson would have been, like Beyonce. I feel like she's the female version of what Michael Jackson was. And when I started seeing her, I was like, oh, okay, well, it's time for me to take my place. It's time for me to really do my thing and try to make something happen.
I had a debate with my family the other day about if Beyonce is like the Michael Jackson of our time, and they were like,
they're never gonna say that.
My parents were like, like, you guys, like, Beyonce doesn't have as much, I guess, as much reach as Michael Jackson. I don't know about that. I want to say that Beyonce
is kind of like, I don't want to say a Michael Jackson 2.0. That sounds like patronizing to Beyonce. But Beyonce, I think, is of that ilk. You know, she could command an audience. You could also argue that Janet Jackson is the same way. You know, you could also argue that Paula Abdul was the same way during her time.
Can you? So their argument, let me tell you what my family's argument was. This is just a little bit of a sidetrack.
No, that's fine.
But like, so they say that my little 11-year-old cousin knows more Michael Jackson songs than Beyonce songs. Their argument is that more younger people, like Michael Jackson is timeless, like more like younger people know about him as much as older people do. And so I guess they don't think that's the same for Beyonce. And I'm just like, I don't know. I feel like she has a very wide ranging fan base. I think so too.
I think they're both different types of stars. You know how you have like supernova stars and you have one that's like a red star, and then you look in the Science Channel on History Channel and there's also a blue star, but they're both powerful in their own right. I think this is exactly what they are, and they hold their own ecosystem, they hold their own galaxy, and they make it work for both of them. And that's why I look to them so closely, because I'm like, oh, I see they have blueprints of what they wanted. Like even Michael Jackson probably had a blueprint before he, like James Brown. James Brown was the Michael Jackson of Michael Jackson's time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's generational, and for the artist, you know, it's a generational thing. And if the one thing though, that with Michael Jackson, you're right, he does have timeless music, but I think Beyonce has already made that step when she won all of those Grammys. She set the precedent for all female artists out there. So
yeah, and then there's that whole there's that whole other argument about her being a Black woman, you know, being, you know, kind of, you know, taking her space. And, you know, I also wonder, like, was she planning this, like, in her Destiny Child days? Was she, you know, it makes me wonder.
Plan. I actually wouldn't, the way her dad worked, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, he was like, okay, by this, I can't remember which year she went solo, but by this year, you are going solo, and you are saying goodbye to these other two.
Well, not goodbye, but you see you later.
Back.
Because there's
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised.
But no, I think, anyways, that was my, I think we won't find out until, like, but it's been like 20 some odd year. Actually, the first time I heard Beyonce was 1997, when Destiny's Child first came out.
Was it No?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And we
to me, like,
yeah, that's timeless.
I mean, I feel like I still play now.
No, part two, not the part one, guys. Remember how every song had a part one and part two before? Because
part one was slow. It was the slow jam. Part one was a slow no. And then the part two, they had
the Wyclef joint.
I forgot they had a part one. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. They were in, like,
I actually didn't hear her sing it because I was at our senior year talent show where these girls went up and they performed No. And I was like, what's going on? And then, of course, you know, this is before internet. So I went to CD Exchange.
I can't even believe you're saying that. Oh my God. I'm gagging.
Like the olden days when you'd have to go to the CD store and be all, hey, what's this song? And then CD store, music. They'd be all, oh, and then those people knew exactly where to go. And they they would know their stuff. Okay, yeah, sidetrack. Well, it's not a sidetrack.
That was Beyonce, my fault, okay, right?
No, it's not. Beyonce is always relevant to everything.
She's the queen.
Okay, so MJ, when did you feel like you were first seen, you know, seeing yourself represented in TV, film, or media?
You know, I've had this question asked to me a couple of times, and, you know, I always say the closest thing that I ever saw remotely as far as the community goes was the All African American and Latinx show, and which featured some Asian individuals who were Filipino.
Filipino, there you go, Filipino.
Yeah, it was Noah's Ark, and they had a Black man, they had a Latinx man, they had a Filipino man, and I mean, they were also gay men, and I never really saw myself in these gay men, but they were a part of the community, so that was the closest thing. But the honest answer to that question is I hadn't saw myself. You know, I never really saw a woman like me on the television screen. I mean, I saw plenty of women on the television screen, and if they were a part of the trans community, I didn't know, you know, because most women back at that time, whether they were trans or not, like, there was just, women had to be quiet about everything.
Right.
So I didn't really see a woman that was really vocal about her transness. Now, as far as the talent goes and seeing the women in talent, I definitely saw women who I thought I saw myself being or seeing myself being a part of or being like when I got older, which were like the Angela Bassetts and the Sanaa Lathans and the Charlize Therons, and the list can go on. Like, these were women that I looked to and I was like, this is the kind of career I want, and this is the kind of woman I'm like this is who I am. But as far as seeing myself, never really saw that, and I think it was because there was not a lot given or opportunities given to trans women back then. And if they were, they kept it very, very hush-hush.
Yeah. I'm just going to plug this documentary Disclosure, because yes. I just remember, so the lady that played the theater director in Cheetah Girls, her name is escaping me.
Cheetah Girls.
Do you guys remember?
That was the best movie.
Yes, but she's part of Disclosure too. She was talking about how she couldn't tell people that she was trans, and she was acting for years, but nobody knew she was trans because that's something that she could never talk about. And it was part of her story, and it was part of who she was, but it was like she had to hide it for so long, and she was getting jobs and she was getting work and stuff. And I think that was part of the fear of coming out. But I remember seeing her and I was like, oh my gosh, she's a, I didn't even think that, but it was like, it is just so sad that like there are people that, I mean, that just can't tell their story, you know, or just can't.
Because of what they might.
They might lose.
You know, there was a lot at stake when it came to, especially Black trans women. Like, I mean, I feel, and this is no shade to the girls who are Caucasian and who are trans, but there is much more opportunity for girls who are Caucasian and trans, especially if they're quote unquote passing. Yes. They get everything handed to them. And I mean, it's, I mean, I understand why. And it's unfortunate because I know a lot of girls who are Caucasian and who are trans, that's not what they want and that's not how they want to be perceived. But unfortunately, that is just what it is. And for Black trans women, the moment we say something about our transness, we're already considered an anomaly. So then and we let someone know, oh, by the way, we're trans. It's like, oh, you have to go. And that's what happened to Tracee Africa. Tracee Africa was the face of a hair brand. And the moment someone found out about her, they told another person within the in the corporation, and then she got fired. Now, mind you, she was the most beautiful woman you would ever see on a franchise like that. But the fact that her transness was such an intimidation when it shouldn't have been was the problem in that time. So, like, that's what the scarceness around it was, and it shouldn't have been, you know.
Yeah, it is settling. I mean, I'm not saying things are changing, but they're changing slowly. You know, I mean, even like I look at something like, again, I always talk about this in every episode, RuPaul's Drag Race, for instance. You know, I was just rewatching a season where Peppermint comes out as trans in the workroom, and everyone's like, oh, that's fine, you know, that's cool, you know, and like it's like no big deal, but it's like, when we, I guess there's a certain generation, I don't know, or just a certain kind of person who's just like, oh, that's fine, you know, that's cool, you know, that's you, you know. But it just pains me to see, like Amanda said, that people just can't be themselves, and because of what they might lose.
Right.
I
will say this, I feel like in this time now, I feel like so much is changing. In this specific time that's happening literally like a month ago, like I would say even a year ago, we weren't even seeing the change happen as fast as we thought it would. But now I'm seeing individuals like Jai, she's like a very prevalent activist, and she's only like 19 years old. And or seeing Got Mick on RuPaul's Drag Race, a trans man who may possibly win, you know, like
I think
they might as well. And like, and I'm rooting for both of them. Like they're both winners to me. Yeah. That's all, you know, but like seeing these things move forward and having a show like Pose that's out and us in our third season, and even though it's the last season, this is still going to push the needle forward for more opportunities to happen. Or like an actress like Alexandra Gray, who is on another television show. Like, I believe that we are definitely moving forward. I think it's just that there just needs to be more conversation and more spaces that are open for all of us, because there shouldn't be a small bracket for just specific trans women. Like, I think it should be opened up a little bit more, and it's happening.
Yeah. And I think like something like Pose, that's, you know, just one story. Well, everyone has individual stories, but again, it's just like every other marginalized community is not a monolith. And that includes the trans community. Everyone has a different journey. And I just, you know, we'll talk about Pose more, but just like how it's just celebrating this culture so much that, you know, and now it's bringing, everyone thinks like they could walk a ball now. Like everyone is like, who knows? But it's just, I adore it. But, you know, you kind of touched on this already, you know, how have you managed, you know, expectations when it comes to, you know, navigating Hollywood? And, you know, I'm sure, you know, ever since, you know, the start of your career, you've seen a change, but how have you, like, as you've come up in the industry, how have you navigated or controlled expectations? There you go, like manage your expectations.
Oh yeah, I mean, I tried my best to lead by example, right? So when I walk into a space, where I see a lot of individuals who are like me, it's quite easy to have the conversation. It's quite easy to have the dialogue because that's my culture. That's what I've been around for all my life, whether it be being in Newark, New Jersey all my life or being in the ballroom scene for 4 years of my life. But when it comes to Hollywood, I lead by example. I walk into the space, I respect everybody, but I also have expectations of people respecting me. So I'm not going to go out of my way to have somebody feel like they can talk to me any kind of way. I just, that's not going to happen. And I think they would want that too. With Hollywood, I think what people get misconstrued about Hollywood is that there are a lot of people that are just alike, especially within Hollywood, because it's the artistic realm. Your niche, sometimes you can be very quirky. You can be very artistic. I would say artsy fartsy. And I feel like in Hollywood, I'm surrounded by a lot of people who are like me, who may not think they're like me because I'm a trans woman, but in reality, we're doing the same thing. We're playing roles and we're also changing hearts and changing minds. So when I go into a space that's probably different from Pose, my mindset is always the same. Oh, I'm coming here to do my job. I'm not coming here to educate you all the time. I think it's important for them to educate themselves. I'm here to do the work and also convey this character that I'm playing so that people can see someone else in me, or I can even see someone else in me. I'm not trying to please anyone. And I'm 30 now, like she's a grown woman now. I'm not trying to please people to make them happy as far as when it comes to my transness. Now, other conversations, yes. Like, I always keep it open. The dialogue should always be open for that. But when it comes to my transness, now that there's so much awareness out there when it comes to us and our, and especially when it comes to our Black sisters out there who are trans, there shouldn't be anything that they are trying to question. And if they are, I think that's something that they probably should pull anyone to the side, like any regular person would do. You know what I've noticed most too, when it comes to our stories as trans individuals, it changes a lot within the years. You know, at first it was with gay men and people didn't know how to deal with gay men. And now it's been normalized so much. And that's not a bad thing, but right. It just shows how the world works when it comes to awareness and acceptance. And it's very weird, but when you have confidence within a community that has always had confidence, it's just easy for awareness to just like trickle into somebody's mind and make them understand, oh, they're just a regular person like me. They're human. Right. They're not this caricature, or they're not this stigma flawed ideal that we've seen on television. And parlaying Pose again, Pose opened up a lot of space for people to see through five different women on a television screen. One of them who's a mother and who is showing that a trans woman can be a mother and she can raise resilient children, that even makes it even more easier for them to see, oh my God, they're normal. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we've always been normal, baby. You know, so that's my mindset.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, because I think it's oftentimes that, especially people of color or anyone in a marginalized community, when we enter a space, and I think that's why me and Amanda started this podcast, is just, it's like, I think a lot of people, honestly, when they enter the podcast, they or in the beginning, they were like, oh, this is just another interview. But we always wanted to create a safe space to talk, because I feel like, especially in the journalism space, people don't know, or people are ignorant, or, you know, people aren't willing to listen. And that's why we have awesome people like you, MJ, who come on.
You're awesome too, okay? The conglomeration of awesomeness, baby. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Lifetime's Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia. From executive producers Robin Roberts and Linda Berman comes the biopic of the legendary Mahalia Jackson. Grammy Award winner Danielle Brooks stars as the trailblazer whose music moved, inspired, and changed people's hearts. Critics have praised Brooks's transformative performance into the Queen of Gospel as thunderingly good. Directed by Kenny Leon and written by Bettina Jilliwa and Todd Kreidler, this Lifetime original movie continues to inspire viewers and highlights the ongoing fight for social justice. Robin Roberts Presents Mahalia for your Emmy consideration in all categories.
like we mentioned before, Pose was just groundbreaking in terms of what it did for representation, especially for the LGBTQ community, the Black community, the female community. It was, it just had all that, all the things that we, like I said, we've been really wanting to see, and the stories that we don't know about that we need to hear. So what was your first reaction whenever this project came your way, whenever you first heard that, or you were you first auditioned, or maybe it was an offer?
Are you offer only, MJ?
What is your offer only? What was your reaction when you first read this project?
So first, I mean, I saw it on a breakdown, and this was while I was still auditioning. I didn't have a job at all. I was still trying to work on making sure that I could just get my break. And when I saw this, this was literally right in the middle while I was auditioning for my actual first Broadway show that I was going to get until I decided to choose Pose. I saw this breakdown of Blanca, Angel, Lulu, and Candy. I don't even think I saw Damon at that point. And the first thing I read about Blanca was nurturing, caring, a mother of the ballroom scene. And those words sold me. I was like, okay, these are all of the depictions that any woman would want. Any woman would want the world to see and let them see how good we can do it, how good we can be nurturers, how good we can be mamas, how good we can raise children. And I had a great mama. I had a strong Black mama in my life. You know what I mean? So I tailored all of the things from my mother, and I built her up along with the trans women that were in my life. I meshed those together and I made that my process for Blanca. And when I read that, I was like, okay, this is what I can do. This is what I know I'm able to do. If it was probably another project that I knew I probably wasn't right for, I probably wouldn't have done it. Now when it comes to when it hit and when it happened, I did not expect for it to get the leverage and for it to go as mainstream as it did. And that was just my insecurities as being a Black trans woman. Mm-hmm. And mainly solely on my transness, because at that time, 5-7 years ago, even before Pose, there wasn't even a lot of language or even vernacular around us. People were still degrading us and calling us specific names. And it's crazy, when Pose came out, I feel like it really changed a lot of the narrative. Like, it really did. Mm-hmm. So I didn't expect it. And when it did, I couldn't stop smiling. And I was happy that we collectively did that. We shifted it.
Yeah. Looking back on 3 seasons, is there a moment that, a highlight moment for you? Is there something that stands out that just will stick in your memory forever as you think about your time on the show?
Yeah. I think the moments on that show that stick out to me most are the moments when me and Billy share a song together, which was Love's Anita, oh. Love Today, and Love. I mean, and a home, not Love, Home. Those were the highlights, because not only did I get a chance to let the world see I could sing, and that was my passion, and that's what I really loved to do, but also people got to hear my voice. They got to hear every facet of my voice. And I'm so happy that they grew to love it. Yeah, you got the people out there that was talking about it was low and all this other stuff. And I was like, yeah, and so, okay. You know, but it's so different from your speaking voice. Okay, and so what? What about Michelle A? You not saying nothing about her?
And she's okay, Michelle A.
So what's the thing? No, but I put all of those things into perspective, because a lot of people have this idea of how women are supposed to be, how they're supposed to talk, what they're supposed to sound like. And I was like, I'm breaking that down. I'm breaking that completely down. You're going to hear every facet of my voice. So when you do hear it, you're going to remember it, you know? And that was the highlight of the whole thing, because I was scared. I was afraid to do that for so long. I think that's what stunned me in the beginning. And when that moment happened, where it was like now or never, I was like, I gotta do it. Ain't no time now. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, the performance of Home, of course, that song for me, every time I hear it, I have to cry. Can you believe one of my old coworkers was all, that's my least favorite song from The Wiz ever. And I was all, how are you gonna disrespect me like that? Anyway. And also also, MJ, I did see you, I think I saw you in Little Shop of Horrors here in Pasadena and loved it. I just loved that whole production, and you and George together were amazing. So season three, final season, when it was announced it was the final season, I felt like I like dropped to my knees and screamed to the heavens, no. But also it's like, I was like, oh, maybe it is time to kind of move on. But what, first off, like, did y'all know that kind of was ending soon? Or, and what can we expect since this is the final season? Because I know that y'all aren't going to go out in a whimper. You're going to go out with a bang, I'm pretty sure. Oh, yeah, right. But what can we expect? What can we, you know... what can you tease for? Will there be cameos that we don't know about? Just tell us everything.
There will be a lot of cameos from a lot of people that you've seen back in the day on television shows that are very, very, very familiar to both of y'all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's going to be a jolt for you guys and you're going to have to, you know, cry your hearts out. Oh yeah, but I'm not saying, I'm just going to leave right there.
Yeah, don't ruin it. I mean, like.
Yeah, I can't. You can pull out the heartstrings, baby.
And also you might get in trouble if you spoil it.
It's true. But I could be a real cryptic kind of girl. I love being cryptic. She's got a little mystery though.
I love her.
But like,
sorry.
No, it's fine. I would say for the most part with third season, I didn't expect for it to end, but I wasn't sad. I was empowered and I was happy and I was proud of the work that each and every last one of us done. And I'll say for myself, for someone who has worked on something for 3 years and who has learned this character from before she was a mama and now being a solidified mother and now establishing and taking hold for herself, I feel like we've definitely come full circle, each and every last character of the show. And we really, really made sure that we did justice to not only ourselves as trans women, but the women that we're emulating and the women that were back in the 90s who were really trying to be where we are right now. You know what I mean? They didn't get that chance to do that. And I'm sure they're like screaming to the heavens like you are right now, like, but in the most happiest way, like our girls did it. And now they've opened up the floor plan for everybody else to just flood pool in. So yeah, third season, there's a lot happening and there's a lot of growth with each and every last one of the characters, I would say.
What's the time kind of period between season two and season three? Is there a lot of years pass by or is it kind of like pretty shortly after?
It's pretty shortly after. There's some time, yeah, there's a time jump for right. Sure. What'd you say?
It starts in 94, right? Season three.
It does start in 94.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of after the Vogue phenomenon and like and all that. And also it's the 90s, which, you know, I'm living for and all that. How was it, you know, I'm curious because, I mean, I'm pretty sure I know how it was like, or we have an idea, but you know, filming during the pandemic, you know, I'm sure that was, did that present challenges or, because I know like you have this huge ball scenes and I was like, are we gonna have those again? Because, you know, big crowd. Oh, you can't say anything. But... I was just thinking because of the pandemic stuff, this damn COVID, you know, bullcorn.
Ass Rona? Oh, yeah.
Yes. But like, how was it just like, I mean, how was it like filming during the pandemic?
At first, you know, I'm sure you know, as many other people around the world know, that a lot of production had to get shut down. Mm-hmm. And when we were in the quote unquote break period of Rona, it was very nerve wracking, especially for me, because I went straight back into the traumatized kid that didn't know if I was going to get anything up after this, if Pose was going to really completely shut down. Then we went back and we got noticed that we were coming back. And when I went back, after we had left, everything the same. It was literally like a bomb, you know, and you see the remains left over. Mm. That's what COVID-19 felt like. We went back and everything was still left in the makeup and hair trailers. Everything on set was still left the same. And it was quite eerie to know that we had gotten shut down, but we came back in a space where we were so comfortable where we should have been. And then after that day, honey, it went right back to normal. We were living our lives. We were happy. We were grateful that we were in the space that we were in. And we kept it pumping. I mean, we knew that we were in trying times, but honey, when it comes to the LGBTQAI community, there's no time to be sitting up here sad about anything. That's not what our community is about. That's not why we have like the rainbow flag, baby. You know, it represents so much power within those colors, and especially with the new one. So I felt like we had to show out and we had to really deliver. So, I mean, we were nervous, and I'll speak for myself. I was extremely nervous, you know, and carrying a show, being in a space of worry and knowing that me being a lead on the show, I just was worried. I didn't know if I was going to be a great example for my other castmates out there. If they were looking at me being sad, then that could have been a reflection on them. And I did not want that. That's the one thing I just did not want to give. And thankfully, every single cast member has their own personality and knows who they are. And they did their own thing. And we all just fed off of each other. And we turned it.
Yes. I'm so glad that y'all went back.
Sorry, that's like my boobs. My poor torpedo boobs. Sorry, y'all. Sorry about that.
I mean, I'm excited. I mean, like, everyone's getting vaccinated now and you know, feeling that Pfizer fantasy, as I'm saying. but, and then, you know, how, I mean, with Pose, you kind of sprinkled this throughout our conversation, but how has the show given you a platform to amplify your message, showcase your talent, and then even just have a space to have meaningful conversations, specifically when it comes to the queer community, the LGBTQIA community, and for people of color, especially in this landscape we're on?
I would say the show has done a numerous amounts of things, especially when it comes to awareness about the Black trans community. And more so than anything, I think it's opened up the conversation about how you deal and handle and have conversations with people like myself or anyone who's a part of my community. And it showed that there's this fruitful, vibrant, uplifting community that's out there that had to find it for themselves, collected each other, sought out and looked for each other, created houses with each other, and really made sure that they knew how to do best for themselves, because they also knew there was a world outside of that community that would not accept them whatsoever. And what Pose simply done for, I think I would say the world, because now it's international. I can't even believe I'm saying that, but now it's international. I think what it's done for the world is it's not only taught a lot of LGBT youth, but it's taught family and mothers and fathers, parents of these young youth. And it's kind of opening the dialogue with them so that they can know how to talk to their young trans kids or their young cis kid or their young, you know, it does not matter, their young gender nonconforming kid.
Yeah.
That's what Pose has done. And I think it's going to continue to do that. And I've been hearing a lot of people say this, but I'm now resonating with it now that it's going down in history and it's probably not going to be going anywhere. And I don't think, for me, I will say, I don't think I'll ever have an opportunity to be a part of something as special as this. So I'm glad that it's going to go down the history books, and I'm glad that it's not going nowhere. And also I'm glad that there might not be another one that may be able to do it like us.
No, there won't be. But we will probably see you 20 years from now for the Pose reunion made for TV movie. We're gonna see you walking balls, you know, 20 years from now.
I'm gonna have a whole cane, honey. I'm gonna have a whole cane.
And you know, there might not be another Pose, but I feel like the series is gonna inspire just so many different other stories. Hopefully. And by the way, I want to, so the actress that I was referring to earlier, her name is Sandra Caldwell. I want to show my respect, because
yes,
yeah, just make sure I put her name out there. But yeah, everybody who hasn't seen Disclosure, I highly, 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 highly recommend watching
it.
Yeah,
of course.
Executive producer Laverne Cox, she's amazing. Yes. We got to highlight all the girls who made that possible. And Sandra, you know, the first time she came forward with her transness was actually when she did a show called Charm. And it was with Kelly Sahar. And I feel like that was the precipice of her letting the world know about her transness. And that was the first time anyone even knew about her transness. So I think, girl, work.
Right. Let's show respect to those that have been in this struggle, this fight, and continue to be in it. So MJ, now that three seasons in with Pose, now that that's sort of under your belt, what's next for you? And when are we getting an MJ Rodriguez album?
Yes, when are we gonna get that album? Doing a cover of No, No, No.
Like a cute little skirt, you know.
Yes. Y'all, come on, House of Darion.
Okay. You know, hey, B. Yeah. So as far as what's next for me, there's a lot that's happening for me right now. I just got some great news actually yesterday about something that's going to be probably coming my way. So I'm very happy about that.
What so is it? Just tell us.
I can't tell you, baby. You're going to have to be on the lookout. Maybe we'll Gina, catch a,
yeah, we'll be on
the catch lookout. A little article, baby. You know, something. But I'm really happy with that. And I'm happy that this is, and this, speaking of the space that we were talking about, holding spaces that we never been a part of, this is this thing that I might possibly be a part of now is one of those opportunities where I get to be in a space where I'm not around a lot of people who are like me, who are trans or who are gender nonconforming. And now I can go into the space and people can see how we all can work together. So I'm happy about that.
Is it
a Marvel title?
Is it a Marvel or DC title?
Oh my God, are you gonna be a part of the Dora Milaje? On-
No, but I am gonna be a part of Dora the Explorer. No, let me stop. No.
Okay. So when are we getting the album?
So let me just be honest with y'all. I've been really working hard on trying to get some music out there, and I finally think that it's gonna be hitting. It may not be an album at first, but I think we are gonna possibly get to an album. But I'm happy that I can possibly release something so people can see who Michaela J is. I've been trying to really get the world to know the person behind MJ, which is Michaela J. So that's coming really soon. Really, really soon, which I'm gagging about. I'm kind of
excited for that. Ooh, yeah. Cannot wait.
Would you do like another Whitney Houston cover or something?
You know, I'm trying to make sure that I solidify Michaela J first. I don't want to go down my auntie's path because she already carved that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to give her homage when I need to because we some North girls, Jersey girls all day. But as of right now, I'm trying to make sure that I solidify who I am and people can see who I am outside of MJ and outside of any other caricature or any other person that they see. So yeah, I'm gonna show some love to her always, but Auntie Whitney, I'm on past.
That will be like your probably third or fourth album of standards. Like you're doing a collection.
Come on here, standards. Oh, he knows about standards. He knows about a cart sheet, baby. You know a chart sheet, right? You know what I'm saying about a chart sheet, right?
What's that? Wait, what?
When you, okay, so you know she's musically inclined.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
So a chart or a lead sheet is literally like a jazz a write down of a contemporary jazz song.
Okay.
If you don't have like the full length transcript of it, it's just a lead sheet. It's just like the chords and the beats. And
she's such a musically inclined. Come on, music theory. Yes.
I can't wait for your album. Okay, so so we like to sort of close off this interview with this segment that we call the facts or the FAQs, just random fun questions. So the first question is there one TV show or film that people would be surprised that you're obsessed with?
One TV show or film that people would be surprised I'm obsessed with? Oh, I can't say Primal because they already know I'm a nerd. I watched this a couple of months ago, but Little Fires Everywhere. Now I know somebody wouldn't expect me to watch that, but I watched all of it and I lived for it.
Amazing.
That show.
Reese and Perry Washington, they don't play.
They don't. Ooh. They do not.
Like, and those are the kind of women I like to work with.
Yes.
Reese was like the, like, she was, I don't know, would you consider her a Karen in that show? I'm not sure.
She was definitely channeling Karen in that show. She was,
yeah, I would say so. I would say so.
She was not overtly Karen. She was kind of like a down low Karen. Was she overtly Karen?
I don't think she
Maybe
was.
Maybe I'm not remembering.
She was definitely on that woman's door checking on her daughter. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. So, MJ, what junk food have you been hoarding during the pandemic?
Oh, I eat all kinds of junk food, but my boyfriend been making sure I get Cinnabons.
Girl.
Yeah, we always have Cinnabons downstairs, and he always brings me up a big old slice, and I eat the whole thing.
That sounds so good right now. Like, my mouth literally just watered when
I'm making it water a little bit more. It's cream cheese frosting.
But do you know so like in the Philippines there's like the ube, the purple yam.
Yep. Oh, and I had some before, just once though, and it's
good. But we're for Oscar Sunday this Sunday, my friend ordered cinnamon roll ube rolls, and it's like smothered in icing. It's here in LA, so
oh, that's so bad, but it's good.
So bad that it's good. Okay, if you could trade lives with anyone for a day, who would it be? Who would it be, and what would you do?
This is a hard one.
I'm gonna say my first answer because I love her as an artist, Ariana Grande. And what would I do? I would probably run all around her mansion and be like, I'm sorry, Ari, I'm just gonna use your body real quick, sis, to just run around this mansion, take a shower in your big old bathroom, put on one of them crop top dresses that I know you got as designer, and I'm just gonna live my whole life as you. And then I'm like, all right, I'm leaving, because I know you got your body.
get that high pony on. And
right? Oh, baby.
Get a couple of falsettos. A couple of those high notes. What are they called?
Whistletone, there you go.
Yeah.
I may remember when I used to sing Mariah Carey acting like I could sing Emotion.
That was a song that everybody went to, honey.
Everybody did that.
Everyone thought, they're like, oh, I could hit that.
Yeah.
No, you can't. I did get, like, someone, my birthday was on Sunday, someone gave me a vinyl of Butterfly, her album.
That was one of the best albums that she came out with.
That was kind of like, I called it her emancipation before her emancipation, because it was when she was really rolling with Diddy and Honey and Breakdown, that song. That's my song. Okay, anyways. Okay, are you the type of person to send an order back at a restaurant?
No, honey, sorry. She's at 5%, my bad. No, I'm going to eat that whole thing because I'm a garbage disposal. And if it look real good, best believe it's going to be disappeared in 5 minutes.
Okay. Yeah. Even if your order's wrong, you wouldn't send it back? Or like something was wrong with it? Like a tweak? Like something's minor?
Like what kind of minor though? Like a
maybe
hair?
They forgot that to add something, or maybe they gave you the wrong order. Would you send it back?
No, I'd probably eat it. And then the person who probably really ordered, excuse me, ma'am, you ate my stuff. I'm so sorry. It was just so good.
Okay, that's a good answer.
Yeah, we're going to have that meal for free. I'll probably still eat it too.
Right? And then tell the people at the store, I'm sorry, this wasn't mine, but I ate it.
Exactly.
Am I going to get it for free?
Exactly. Okay, if a song played every time you walked into a room, what would it be?
What? Oh my God. Find Your Way Back by Beyonce.
Find your way back. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
Got it back.
Find your way. That's a good so video.
Good. That's good. Yeah. Come on, Beyonce. Just feeling like you're going to do a collaboration with Beyonce. We're going to put that. You're going to put that on your vision board. Put on your vision board.
I'm praying it will. And we will tear it up together. I know that for sure. I can't wait until y'all see season 3. Y'all going to live. Y'all not going to.
And also you're going to do a remake of No, No, No with the original.
Oh, you heavy on this. No, No, No. I mean, a girl. You heavy on it.
This is how Dino. Yeah.
Once I remember something from like kind of my. I just stick with it because I remember those girls dancing to that. Anyway.
All right, get a year down the line, you better not be surprised when it come out.
Yes.
It's gonna be you, Beyonce, Kelly, and Michelle performing No, No, No.
And you're just gonna be.
And Wyclef, of course.
Oh yeah.
So, Our last question is there an underrepresented voice in the industry, whether it's an actor, writer, producer, creator, that is not in the mainstream that you think people need to know about and deserve more recognition and shine?
Oh my God, I was
in the industry.
Underrepresented voice. I was just talking about this yesterday. Underrepresented voice that's not in mainstream right now.
Somebody that's doing dope things, but maybe not a lot of people know about them yet, but they're up and coming, or we should be looking out for them.
I would say, if this is okay too, because I think she's not really, she hasn't done a lot of interviews or anything. She's done a lot of music, but Bree Runaway. A lot of people haven't heard about her. She's a new artist that's coming out. I feel like, she's from London. Beautiful, beautiful chocolate girl. And I think she just needs more. She needs more. Her music videos are on point. Her songs are catchy as hell. I just think she needs more marketing because she's that girl. Like, that's how I feel. I look at her and I'm like, you're that girl. Like, so people need to see more of you, period.
Okay, I just Googled her and she has some looks and she is gorgeous. Bree Runway,
okay. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay, so we learned something
right. Like, yeah. I'm sorry, I just had a moment, sorry.
Shout out to Bree Runway though.
Yes. She's, oh my God, her looks. I'm loving it, sorry.
Okay. MJ, thank you so much for being here with us today. Again, congrats on Pose. Like I said, groundbreaking show. It was needed, and I'm glad we had it for 3 seasons. And I can't wait to see what else you have in store.
Thank you, bro. Yeah. I can't wait to see y'all see too. Y'all gonna be real excited about that.
I mean, I think they were gonna send us episodes, but I don't think we got them in time for this interview. Once I get those, you better believe I'm gonna watch all of them because that's my show. But yeah, man, MJ, thank you so much. And thank you for just being you and doing all that you do and representing and your voice. You know, one day we're going to sing Home at karaoke. That's the deal. And we're going to eat Cinnabon.
Yes. Yes, we are. And I'm going to chomp down, honey. And don't judge me too, because I'm going to eat it real quick because it's that good.
No, I eat, like on my plate, I eat things as if it's running away. Like I
thank
will
you.
Eat.
Okay, so you like me.
I will
my stepfather told me today, he was like, oh, you can eat, girl? I was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
I will eat a Chipotle or like a burrito in under 5 minutes because that's how.
Oh, damn.
I know. I'm a burrito trash.
Chipotle burrito? That's quick.
I'm trash. Like, right? I'm telling you. I'm a vacuum. It's nice.
I respect that.
Nice.
Vacuum, I'm a garbage disposal.
Yeah, y'all will hate me. I eat very slow.
No, I would sit there and look at you. I'm like, yes, sis. You enjoy it?
Yes. I never finish my meal. So like,
then me and MJ would be all you finishing that?
Do you want that cucumber right there? Okay.
You can have it.
It got some salt and some pepper on it and it got vinegar on it. You sure? Right. Okay. Cool.
Thank you again, MJ.
Thank you so much, MJ.
Of course. Thank you. Have a good one.
Take care. Okay, bye-bye. Yeah.